Tears rolled off Elena's face. She seemed to shrink in on herself. Anya knew that this was the moment to strike. Anya fell on top of her. She pressed a knee against Owena's forearm, keeping it down. Then drove the hilt of her own sword into Owena's wrist. The sword spilled from her fingers. The flames failed the moment the contact with Owena Llewellyn's hand was broken. Somehow, Owena found some final ounce of strength and reached up, grabbing Anya's hair. Anya heard the sickly rupturing of nasal cartilage and felt the wetness of blood, but Owena didn't release her grip. She tore at Anya's hair until they both scrambled to their feet. Owena's foot connected with Anya's wrist. Joan's sword spun out of her hand and skittered beneath the desk. Owena grabbed her own sword, the blade reigniting as soon as her fist closed around the hilt. Owena took the full impact of the charge and stumbled. Anya stood in the bay of the broken window and stared down at the body below, Giraldus Cambrensis' sword lying on the gravel driveway beside it.
It didn't have to be this way.
Sickened, Anya turned away. No matter what the woman had done, though, Anya wouldn't just leave her. She would stay with her until the ambulance arrived, until the police arrived, whether it was to take Owena Llewellyn to the hospital or the morgue. Anya retrieved her cell phone and went to look out the broken window again.
What?
She expected the worst, but was startled at what she saw. There was no sign of Owena anywhere.
All I need is for you to get up onto one of the towers.
That's all? There are special ops guys crawling over everything. We can't even get in through the front gate. What did you have in mind? Helicopter in and drop me down a cable?
It's an option. There's no need to go in through the front gate. There's no need to go inside the castle at all.
Garin thought about what Rue was suggesting for a moment, allowing it to sink in, while his eyes traced their way up the outer walls of the castle.
Which tower?
Work with me.
Garin slipped a 20-pound note beneath the saucer of his cup along with his business card, plain black with his phone number and first name. With a bit of luck, she'd call later. So, all he had to do was get to the top of the tower, find King Arthur's cloak of invisibility, get back out and give Rue the slip for a few hours. And then maybe he could take her for a drink. Maybe in Paris. That always went over well. Anya felt an overwhelming surge of relief that Owena Llewellyn had survived the fall. That was quickly replaced by confusion at how she'd just gotten up and walked away. Anya scanned the ground for some sort of tracks, anything that might give her a clue as to where the woman had gone. She had to find her, and not just for her health. She needed to recover the sword. That was her primary objective here. Get the sword, bring it home. She walked a full circuit of the house. There was no sign of her. No freshly trodden path, no trail of blood, nothing. Until she reached the far side of the house.
Huh? No!
Anya ran after the car, her arm throbbing, but she was too slow. She came around the side of the house just as a car disappeared down the drive. There was no time to waste. She raced to the Porsche, heart sinking as she saw that one of her tires was flat. She kicked the tire in frustration. It was a mess. The rubber had been melted away, obviously, by the sword. Anya felt her phone vibrating, but she had no intention of answering it. She wasn't ready to speak to Garin and admit she'd failed. Anya used the kitchen sink to scrub her hands, then decided to take another look in the study. A breeze pulled the curtains through the remains of the window. The material snagged on teeth of broken glass still caught in the wooden window frame. There was no way of knowing where Owena had gone, or when, if ever, she would return now she knew Anya was on to her. She'd taken the sword, but it was doubtful she'd taken the whetstone, given its sheer weight and the lack of time she'd had to move it. One thing was for certain, she had an answer to the puzzle of one criminal committing crimes at two locations. Owen had found the sword, his daughter the whetstone.
Where is it?
It wasn't on the desk where it had been. But then she saw it, lying amid the torn pages of journals and papers on the floor behind the desk.
Ha!
The whetstone of Tudwall Tudglid was larger and heavier than she'd expected. It took all of her strength to lever it up enough just to slide her fingers beneath, never mind lift it. Anya heaved it up onto the desk. There was a full-length mirror on the wall behind the door. Anya didn't want to look at any lingering damage the burning sword might have left, yet she couldn't help it. She could feel the tightness of skin across the side of her face, and her arm ached bone deep. She stood in front of the mirror.
Oh, God.
She looked like she'd been through a small war. Her clothes were singed and blackened from contact with the sword, the sleeve torn and scorched. The arm itself wasn't so bad, only an angry red welt where the sword had burned her, and it was far from lasting. Her face was more worrying. The skin had already begun to blister and crust across her cheek. But again, it could have been a lot worse. She didn't want to imagine the damage if the sword had been in contact with her flesh for even a heartbeat longer. On the bright side, she'd recovered one of the artifacts Rue was concerned about. It was better than leaving empty-handed. She took a grip on the stone and lifted it again. Struggling to find an easy method to carry it as she picked a lurching path through overturned furniture and other debris. It was only when she reached the door that she realized what she wasn't seeing. The notebook that Owenna had been looking at. It wasn't on the desk and it wasn't on the floor amid the other torn papers. There were plenty of journals and books strewn across the floor. But on her hands and knees, as she went through them, Anya knew for sure it was gone. Owenna had come back into the house for it while Anya was out there looking for her, which meant it was the only thing in the room the woman thought worth saving.
Well, it's gone now, like the sword. No use crying about it.
Anya had struggled with the whetstone, manhandling it out of the house and into the passenger side of the Porsche. Despite the damage Owenna had caused to the tire, changing to a new one was relatively simple. None of the heat had fused the nuts, so it was merely a case of getting her hands dirty. The physical work helped her work her frustration out, too. Anya drove far from that cursed house towards the nearest cell tower. She tapped the screen of her cell to return her missed call.
Too busy for me?
Well, I was a bit preoccupied fighting for my life, nothing personal.
Given that you're not dead, I take it that it went well.
As well as can be expected.
Rue wants to know how you're getting on.
I've got good news and I've got bad news. You pick.
I'll take the good news first.
Tell Rue that I've recovered the whetstone of Tudwall Tudglid.
Excellent. And the bad news would be you haven't recovered the sword, I'm guessing.
Yep, the daughter has it. I lost her.
That was the fighting for your life part, I suppose?
Yep, and it ended with a defenestration.
Oh, that's a little extreme.
It was unintentional. I can't believe she walked away from it, frankly. She slashed one of my tires so I couldn't chase her.
You're not having a lot of luck with cars, are you?
No idea where she's gone. I do know that she recovered her father's journal, so I think it's reasonable to assume she's following in his footsteps.
Which would be great if we knew where he intended to go next.
Exactly.
Anya could very faintly hear a muffled conversation through the phone.
The old man says to make your way up to Carnarvon as soon as you can. Forget about the woman. We need you here tonight. I'll sort out a hotel room.
Anya had no choice but to go back to the old hotel to recover her things. She wouldn't be coming back. Every inch of her ached. Every cord of muscle was on fire. Every nerve sang. Owenna Llewellyn felt as though she was alive for the first time. The drive took her through the mountains that lay in the heart of Wales. The sword was wedged between the seat and the passenger's door. It was just out of reach, but she felt reassured by its nearness. She had no idea how she'd managed to get back on her feet after the fall. As the impact happened, she was sure she was dead, that she'd crushed her spine and shattered her skull. But when the world didn't go out, when she didn't stop breathing, she tried to move. Maybe she'd just been lucky, improbably, impossibly lucky. Or maybe it was because she'd clung on to the sword for dear life. It didn't matter. She was alive and in one piece, and she wasn't about to look a gift horse in the mouth by hanging around to give her father's killer a second chance. She didn't understand how that bitch had been able to pull that sword out of thin air. Had she claimed one of the treasures Owenna didn't know about? She had to run away until the pain decreased enough for her to defend herself properly, find somewhere safe to study her father's journal, and discover where the other treasures were hidden. She'd already found a reference to where he believed another of the treasures might lie, one of the greatest of them all. If she could get her hands on it, she'd be able to do anything she set her mind to, including avenging him.
I promise, Dad. I won't let you down.
The paradoxical pair sat in the small hotel bar after dinner, Rue nursing a cognac, Garin sticking with coffee because he was the one about to risk life and limb. He didn't fancy being perforated by a hail of Royal Guards bullets and leaking alcohol. He'd wanted to wait until the following night, take advantage of tonight to watch the routines and get a feel for where the guards were complacent, assuming they were somewhere. Rue had insisted that if Anya made it back tonight, they were making their attempt. It bought them time for a second chance if things didn't go according to plan. Garin was a fan of second chances, but not necessarily of the circumstances that led to them being needed. It hadn't taken long to locate an outdoor adventure store that stocked decent climbing rope and a good pair of shoes for the job at hand.
There's one thing I don't understand. If you hid this cloak so well and never told anyone where, why would anyone even think to look for it here?
It seemed a reasonable question, and Garin had wanted to ask it all day. The intimation, of course, was that Rue hadn't been able to keep his own secret.
Ah, but they didn't say I never told anyone. Just as there was someone keeping an eye on the unmarked grave in St. David's, there was someone who did the same here.
And you think he might not have been as trustworthy as you had hoped?
I have not heard from her for some time.
And you didn't think to contact her?
Rue shook his head, eyes on the floor.
There's something you're not telling me here. You wouldn't have us charging up here and breaking into the castle, the car, in the middle of the night unless you thought there was a good chance she'd told someone.
Rue didn't reply. His attention was focused solely on the last of the brandy that he swirled around in his glass.
The last time we spoke, we argued.
You need to speak to her now. No disagreement can be bad enough that it's worth the risk of us failing.
It's too late.
It's never too late. Apologize. You can do it, you silver-tongued old devil. How long is it since you argued?
40 years. Maybe longer. 50? After a while, you'll start to lose count.
50 years? The woman's surely dead.
I tried to find her a few weeks ago. She spent her last years in a nursing home. She suffered from dementia. She didn't know who anyone was because she was living back in the days of her youth. Believe me, it's the reason why people like us should never get close to anyone. It's too hard watching them slowly die. It was easier to walk out with her hating me than ever go back and say I was sorry.
Who would she have talked to?
No one, someone. Either is equally possible. She might not even have known she'd said anything. But she had a nephew who was an historian. He worked in the castle. That doesn't mean she told him, but it doesn't mean she didn't either.
Only one person can keep a secret.
I should have come back to move it years ago. But I didn't want to be reminded of her.
You've never thought of finding someone to take her place? Another watchkeeper, I mean?
It didn't seem so important. The world has changed. The Whetstone has been unguarded for so long that I haven't so much as thought about it for decades. I'd buried it beneath a site where the law was supposed to prevent excavation. And when they dug it up, no one recognized it for what it was. Or so I thought. Someone obviously did.
The family Llewellyn.
The daughter. The son doesn't appear to share the same familiar obsessions. As the more I think about it, the less likely it seems that Owenna Llewellyn is in possession of the mantle.
How so?
She would have used it to her advantage. Even Anya would have struggled against a woman capable of phasing in and out of sight.
And you still sent her with no warning?
Would you rather I had sent you?
Before he had the opportunity to answer the question, Anya walked into the bar. At the sight of her scorched clothes and blistered face, both men were briefly stunned into silence.
That must have been some fight.
Yeah, well, now I'm here. So, are you gonna tell me why I had to drive like a bat out of hell to be here tonight instead of arriving tomorrow?
All she wanted was food, a hot bath, and the chance to stretch out on a bed for an hour or so. Judging by Rue's expression, she'd be lucky to get half an hour to gulp down a soda and a sandwich. Garin secured the rope to Anya's waist. Anya had free-climbed plenty of times, higher and more complicated climbs than this, but this was a sheer wall, and the higher she went, the heavier the rope was going to feel as it tugged behind her. She rested her hand against the wall. The stone was slick with moisture.
Not good.
She'd known that it was a dumb idea the moment the suggestion came out of Garin's mouth. But the reality of just how dumb was only beginning to settle in now she was confronted by the actual climb. Besides the less than optimum conditions, they had to stay out of sight of the guards and the powerful spotlights.
Here goes.
She began the slow ascent. The toeholds were treacherously slippery. It was a long way down should she fall, and she wasn't even halfway yet. There were so many things she was doing here she wished she wasn't. Though Rue was adamant, not so much as a scratch on the castle wall, not so much as the tink of a hammer driving in a belay pin. Nothing that might draw the guards, who would almost certainly shoot first and ask questions later.
Great.
She worked her way slowly higher. Her arm was giving her problems. The muscle beneath the burn couldn't take her weight as well as her other arm, meaning she favored it as she climbed. Garin waited at the bottom. Rue was somewhere in the shadows, with a vantage point that included the street and the castle gates. She had only seen one soldier on patrol, his silhouette moving along the battlements. The blocks of stone were large, meaning that she had to stretch for each toehold and push herself up for every fingerhold. It wasn't good. It was exactly how accidents happened, but Anya was in the zone. She moved instinctively, choosing the holds without looking at them, without looking down at the drop, and when the slick surface threatened to betray her, she trusted her shoes to keep her on the rock. Eventually, her hand reached out, flexing and stretching, seeking the next handhold, and found a flat surface for her fingers to curl over. She was at the top. There was no flooding sense of relief. This was the most dangerous part of the climb. A fall from here would be fatal. Muscles and sinews strained and ached as she reached over the parapet, the rough edge of stone block digging into her flesh through the thin material she was wearing. At least she was over. She lay on the stone floor on the other side of the parapet, trying to will the pain away.
Very subtle, Garin.
The moonlight had been no help when she'd been climbing, but here, on one of the highest parts of the castle, there was nothing to cast shadows. So she stood in a pool of clear moonlight for all the world to see. All they had to do was look her way. Between the crenels of the defensive wall, she secured the rope with a knot she would be able to release once they both climbed back down. She checked the knot a couple of times before giving Garin the signal to climb. He scrambled up the wall quickly, with the rope threaded around his leg and trapped in his feet to serve as a makeshift harness. She watched as he climbed, then used her vantage point to see if she could see Rue, but he was well and truly hidden. Anya braced herself and offered an arm to help haul Garin over the battlement. As Anya wound up the rope, she gave Garin a few moments to get his breath back.
Time to check in.
Garin pressed a button on the Bluetooth earpiece he was wearing.
We're in.
Anya touched Garin's arm and pressed a finger to her lips. Someone was crossing the courtyard. It might not be a regular patrol checking for intruders, but that didn't mean that the man would not be keeping his eyes and ears open. It sounded as though the footsteps had been moving toward the tower, but she could not be sure. Garin scrambled away from her, moving like a crab, running his hands over the stone floor of the parapet, until, in the corner farthest from them, he located a dark opening.
Found it.
No doubt this was the stairwell down to the inside of the tower, which would lead to the courtyard, the walkway along the inside of the defensive wall, or possibly both.
This might take a few minutes.
He pulled a small Swiss Army knife from his pocket and opened it up. He ran the blade between the stone blocks to clear out the grit and dirt that had gathered and had been ground in over the generations. Anya watched him work. It was obvious the stone hadn't been disturbed recently. If the mantle was gone, it had been taken years ago. Garin slowly opened the gap around the stone with his knife until the blade slid easily into the dirt.
This is the one.
Anya unhooked a tool that Rue had given to her, a strange piece that turned at right angles. Garin nodded. She worked the hook's bill into the slot he'd levered up. She slowly turned the tool 90 degrees, teasing and twisting it until she could feel the hook grind into position under the slab. Together, they tugged on the handle. They looked at each other and nodded. The stone shifted again, slowly at first. Then fragments of grit and grime exploded in a shower of dust. Garin shifted his position and slipped the fingers of one hand into the gap they had created to gain a secure grip. As the stone slab was lifted, it became obvious that its edge had been cut to create an overlap that sat on a matching shoulder in the stones surrounding it, fashioning a hollow beneath it. Anya could get her hand inside. She felt about frantically, expecting to find the mantle of King Arthur, but her fingers closed on nothing.
It's gone.
It's got to be there.
It's gone, as in not there.
Rue is going to lose it. He already thinks this is all his fault. I'm not going to be the one to tell him. He loves you. You get to break the bad news.
Shh. Anya worked her fingertips into the deepest corner of the secret space. She felt them brush over something. Something with a different texture. She found an edge and pinched it between a finger and thumb and pulled it out. It was a muslin bag, and it had obviously deteriorated over time. Anya sank back against the wall, oblivious to the fact that Garin was beginning to struggle to recover the slab. Once he recovered the stone, he brushed dirt into the grooves, rubbing as much of it in as he could to mask the fact the hiding place had been discovered.
I take it that's it.
Anya didn't get a chance to respond.
Move!
In an instant, Garin snatched up the rope and threw it over the parapet wall. Garin went first, and as he went over the top, Anya pressed the muslin sack into his hand. Anya followed him, wrapping her wrist and waist around the rope, ready to step out into nothing.
Who's there?
The beam of a flashlight shone upward from the stairwell. In a moment, it would be too late. She had to go over the top now, even though Garin wasn't on the ground. She stepped off the wall into thin air, bouncing hard once, twice, three times, the rope burning as it slid through her hand. She needed to get to the bottom and release the rope before the guard saw it and raised the alarm. Still 30 feet shy of the ground, she found a hand jam and pulled the quick release on the knot, sending the rope snaking to the ground. Anya held her position, listening, and willing the guard to move on without investigating any further.
Nothing up here, Johnston.
The flashlight beam turned around the perimeter wall above her, casting weird shadows through the crenellations. But the guard's face never appeared over the edge. Hanging there, Anya felt the muscles in her injured arm slowly burn, cramping until her fingers felt like they had to let go to ease the pain. All she could think was that there was no way she could make the climb back down again. Her muscles and sinews had frozen, but she had no choice. It was that or fall, and she didn't like the odds of survival if she simply let go. She shifted her balance, taking all of her weight on her toes to relieve the strain on her injured arm. Sweat gathered at the nape of her neck and trickled slowly down her spine. It broke out on her brow, rolling down her temples and threatening to sting her eyes. The fact she couldn't just wipe it away made the sensation excruciating. Blinking furiously to clear her vision, she moved her hands one line of bricks lower, taking her weight on the fingers of her good hand, and was moving again with painstaking care. She could feel Garin willing her on, but she wasn't about to risk a misstep. Cheek pressed tight to the stone so she could feel the roughness against her skin, she descended until at last she felt the lightest of touches of his hands on her ankles. Garin nodded toward the opened muslin bag, its contents spilled on the ground. There was a small chamois leather wrap, which he'd unfolded to reveal a small envelope with Rue's name in careful, faded script. What there wasn't was any sort of cloak or mantle.
I know it's supposed to be invisible, but...
Oh, not good. Not good at all.
The hiding place had been compromised, the treasure long gone. All that was left in its place was some sort of letter to taunt Rue, and now they were going to have to tell him they'd failed. Again. Today wasn't a good day.
Where's Rue?
Not here.
The sky was clear. The moon lit up the square more effectively than the dull amber glow of the 5 working streetlights along it. Owenna Llewellyn watched the Creed woman. Everywhere she turned, she seemed to be waiting. It was as if she were haunting her or taunting her. This time, she was with 2 men. Owenna stood in the doorway of a cafe, masked by shadows as she looked out across the market square toward the high walls of the castle. She had the sword at her side, the blade wrapped in a piece of sacking and clutched tight in her hand. She wore a single leather driving glove and didn't dare touch the hilt, for fear the sword would burst into flame regardless of the glove and betray her hiding place. She had not expected to see anyone moving around at this time of night, let alone the Creed woman. Not here. Not so much farther along the quest than she'd imagined possible. There could only be one explanation, and it confirmed Owenna's worst fears.
Anya Creed is on a quest for the treasures of Britain. That's why she murdered Dad.
She watched the 3 of them separate, one moving off into the shadows to take up a position as watchman, the others appearing to ready themselves to scale the castle wall. Her father's notebook had been vague, but the sight of them removed every last lingering doubt. The mantle of King Arthur was hidden in the tower, waiting to be claimed. She saw the man move into his own private spot from where he could see the market square and the roads leading to and from the castle.
Psst!
Creed was already at the top of the tower, and the second man was about to follow her up the rope she was lowering for him. As she turned, Owenna saw the watcher seemingly stare straight at her hiding place. He stepped from his hiding place, and she was sure he was about to stride toward her and unmask her, but he turned his back on her and watched the progress of the other 2 until the man was hauled up over the parapet. That meant they were close to finding the mantle. In a moment, her chance would be gone forever, and so would her revenge. She moved quickly across the cobbled square. It was only as she drew a little closer, while the man was distracted by his team up on the tower, that she realized just how old he was. This was going to be much easier than she'd thought. She slipped the sword free of the sacking. She clamped a hand over the old man's mouth and pressed the sharp edge of the blade against his flesh.
Make a noise and it will be your last.
She let go of the blade and took hold of the sword at the hilt. The blade came to life despite the leather glove, its bright blue blush of flame lighting up the old man's face. The sight of it was enough to stop his struggles. He knew what was going on. He knew how much trouble he was in.
This way.
The narrow alley led to a slightly wider road that in turn led to an open parking lot that was in near total darkness, save for a single working street light. There was a solitary car parked in the darkness on the far side. Hers.
Get moving.
She pushed him on, every few steps jabbing him in the back to keep him going in the right direction. When they got to the car, Owenna popped the trunk. The old man made no attempt to hide the concern on his face. She liked that.
Don't worry, I'm not going to make you get in. Turn around, put your hands behind your back.
He did as he was told. The courtesy light in the trunk revealed a scatter of plastic cable ties that Geraint had thrown in there months ago. He used them when he was out doing jobs, organizing cables and the like. Owenna needed both hands to secure the plastic tie, so she leaned the sword against the car. The second she released her hold on the hilt, the flame died out and the side of the parking lot was plunged into darkness. Owenna cinched just a little tighter than she needed to, so the tie bit into his leathery skin. She almost hoped that he would attempt to get away. She would be able to stop him if he did, and hurt him, for her father. Because even if it had been the Creed woman who had run him off the road, there was blood on the old man's hands as well.
What do you want?
The same thing as you.
World peace?
Don't play games with me. We both know what I'm talking about.
Rue said nothing, just stared into her eyes.
You're not what I expected.
How so?
You're old.
I am. That means I've grown accustomed to living. What do you want?
I want to know your name for a start.
Awenna snatched up the sword again. She pressed the now bright blue blade bare inches from his face, so it stung and blackened the white bristles pushing through his skin. She expected him to beg for his life. He didn't. That was interesting.
Rue. My name is Rue.
She opened the rear door of the car and, placing a hand on top of his head, helped him inside. She slipped behind the wheel, studying her prisoner in the rearview mirror.
Rue.
That's right.
You're not dead.
No, I'm not.
You actually exist.
It would seem so. And I assume you are Awenna Llewellyn?
So we know each other. Isn't that nice?
I'm not sure nice is the word I'd use, given that I am tied up. But it is good to know who has taken me hostage, I suppose.
Awenna turned on the interior light, then pulled her father's notebook out of the glove box. She opened it and found the page she wanted, the one with his name written on it, and showed it to him.
It's because of you I'm here. See your name there, in black and white? You led Dad here, and now you've led me here. I suppose I should thank you.
I suppose I should say, you're welcome.
Anya followed the edge of the castle wall, looking for any indication as to where Rue might have gone, and hoping to stumble across him just around the corner. A couple of small boats were moored at the water's edge. She peered into the blackness.
You don't think he's fallen in, do you?
We'd have heard the splash. Besides, why would he have come close to the water?
Indeed. But that being the case, where's the old bastard gone?
Maybe he headed back to the hotel?
Unlikely.
Well, we came down empty-handed.
He wouldn't just leave, no matter how disappointed he was. It's not like him.
The man's a law unto himself.
That he is. Who knows what goes on in the old man's head? He might have gone for a walk to clear the cobwebs. He might have gone to stand outside his old flame's house and look at the windows, imagining he could somehow knock on the door and say sorry. Or he might have gone in search of a stiff drink. I say leave the worrying until the morning.
Old flame? I think we've got some catching up to do.
I'm not sure it's anything. Basically, he had some woman looking out for the cloak, like he had the curate watching over the sword, only I guess it was a bit more complicated. They had a fight and never talked again. I don't know if it was pride or what, but he couldn't bring himself to talk to her again. And now the treasure's gone, I guess he thinks she betrayed him.
Anya thought about the letter they'd found at the battlements. No doubt it was an apology or an attempt to explain what had happened.
Well, it's not like we can whistle for him as if he were some lost dog, as much as I like the idea. Let's go before someone gets nosy and spots us.
Right. It's not like we can pull a cloak of invisibility up over our heads, is it?
I like you, Anya Creed. Have I mentioned that?
Not for at least a week.
Sunrise began somewhere beyond the horizon. The old man was asleep in the back of the car. He hadn't caused any trouble all night. Not that she'd expected him to. She'd grilled him after she'd moved the car, finding a tourist lot away from the town with a view looking out over the sea. It had been a frustrating interrogation. The old man wasn't much of a talker. Rue seemed to have aged a decade. It must have been uncomfortable being back there all night.
The castle was built after the English defeated Llewellyn, the last true Prince of Wales. That's what they called him, you know. Llewellyn the Last. Llewellyn, that's my name.
Well, I'd say that's quite a coincidence.
No coincidence.
I didn't really think it was. Is that what this is all about? Is this why your father spent all of his life looking for the treasures? Because of some misguided notion that you're descended from Llewellyn the Last and it's your birthright?
You knew my father? How? What were you? Friends? Enemies?
I knew him well enough to know he killed a friend of mine to get that sword you've been waving about.
He wasn't a killer! Not like that friend of yours. Anya Creed drove him off the road and left him to die.
Awenna turned in her seat to get a better look at him. His face was impassive. not so much as a flicker of emotion or surprise.
You already knew that, didn't you?
She told me about the accident.
It wasn't an accident!
I suppose not. He was trying to run her off the road. Why do you think he'd do that? Guilt?
If she was so innocent, why not just call the police? Why kill him?
She didn't kill him, he died. There's a difference.
You're playing word games. She ran him off the road. That's why she's hidden her car, and that's why you are lying.
It really doesn't matter to me whether you believe me or not. It's the truth. I let God be my judge.
Anya Creed will pay for what she's done to Dad.
But right now, Awenna knew she needed to focus on getting the mantle of King Arthur. Vengeance would come soon after.
Hello?
It's Awenna. Not going to say hello? Oh, I thought we were friends.
What do you want?
What do I want? Oh, that's an easy question to answer. I want the mantle of King Arthur.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that the best you can do? I saw you climb in the tower last night. So why don't you ask Rue what you should do?
Rue?
You heard me. I'll wait while you go and check his room. Go on, check.
Awenna held on as the silence stretched out, until the phone she'd taken from Rue's pocket started to ring on the dashboard.
Do you believe me now?
Where is he?
He's safe.
Where are you?
Questions, questions. You really are an annoying woman. Don't you get it? I'm in charge here. I want the mantle. You will meet me at the ferry terminal at 1 o'clock and bring it with you. That's the price for the old man's life.
I can't give you what I don't have.
Don't lie to me.
I'm not lying. It wasn't there.
That's a problem then, isn't it? Because if you don't have it with you when you come to the ferry terminal, you won't see Rue again. It really is as simple as that. And needless to say, get the police involved and the old man dies. Be there at 1.
The old man remained passive. He hadn't tried to call out any special message for his companion, and she hadn't demanded to speak to him or any other sort of proof of life. Awenna didn't know if she should be troubled by that or not. Anya ran out of her hotel room and across the corridor, now wide-eyed and awake. A very unhappy-looking Garin poked his head around the door.
All right, all right. Where's the fire?
Rue has been kidnapped.
What do you mean, kidnapped?
Awenna, Owen Llewellyn's daughter. She has him. She called me from his phone and threatened to kill him if we don't meet her at the ferry terminal by 1.
I guess we should have made sure he was in his room last night after all. And so much for the romantic, broken-hearted version of this story. Go, get the shower and get out of your PJs, because as good as you look in them, they're not really rescue attire. Besides, I'm not exactly dressed.
5 minutes.
Anya's short shower had dragged on. She wished that the hot needles of water could wash her guilt away. She should have checked on Rue. She'd let the man down. They were a team, and she knew that you should never leave one of your number unaccounted for. Not ever. By the time she had dressed and returned to Garin's room, he'd already ordered breakfast from room service and was working at his laptop.
I've got a tracker running on Rue's phone. He's on the move, and best guess is toward Holyhead. Be aware there's no guarantee that it's Rue. Llewellyn's daughter could just as easily have put the phone in someone else's car and be sending us on a wild goose chase.
That's assuming she knows you can track it.
Even a third grader knows this kind of stuff, Anya. It's not magic. She's heading towards the ferry terminal now. Looks like they've got about an hour lead on us.
Then we'd better get a move on.
Eat first. I can't remember seeing you eat since we got here. No telling when we might get another chance.
Garin lifted the cloth from a plate of scrambled eggs, bacon, sausage, and fried tomato. She wanted to argue with him, but this entire thing had always been about being 2 steps behind the Llewellyns, and without the mantle, she and Garin had nothing to trade for Rue's life. They needed to come up with a plan. Awenna bought limp, wax-paper-wrapped sandwiches and lukewarm coffee from a mobile catering van parked on the side of the road. Following that, she found a secluded spot farther away for them to eat without risking unwanted attention. She'd considered keeping the old man trussed up and feeding him one bite at a time, but if anyone had seen her, they'd remember the sight. She had no real option but to cut him free and let him get out of the car to relieve himself.
Before you get any clever ideas, I'm younger than you and faster, and I've got the sword. Look around you. There is no one to see if I cut you down.
I'm an old man, Owenna. I've got no intention of running anywhere.
Good.
Owenna felt a twinge of guilt at the sight of his wrists. They were red and raw after being tied for so long, but the old man hadn't complained once, as if he accepted his fate, whatever that might be. He ate slowly. She couldn't blame him. As last meals went, it wasn't exactly the height of fine dining.
So what will you do when you have Arthur's mantle?
What will I do? Well, the first thing I will do with it is use it to get revenge.
On Anya? She is innocent in all of this.
Innocent? How could she possibly be innocent? By what definition of the word? She killed my father. She would have killed me, too.
Not Anya. Believe me, if Anya Creed had intended to kill you, you'd be dead.
Is that supposed to make me feel... What, like she saved me? So I should feel grateful? Do you have any idea how powerful this sword is? Do you have any idea what it's capable of?
I know that it is perfectly capable of killing old men who have never done anyone any harm.
I don't want to kill you, Rue. I just want what's mine by rights. I want the mantle. Then you can go.
I wasn't talking about me. I was talking about an old priest who only ever wanted to help people.
I told you before, I don't want to hear your lies. My father didn't kill anyone. He wasn't that kind of man. He would carry spiders out into the fields rather than crush them. He never hurt anyone in his life.
But even as she said that, the image of her father holding up the sword above Geraint, eyes wild, flashed through her head.
I saw the priest's body. There was an unmistakable burn on the corpse. You know about the burning, don't you? You know what happens when an heir of the last wields that sword? So tell me, who else could have done it?
It must have been an accident. Or maybe it was self-defense? Have you thought about that?
It's possible, of course. But explain to me why he hid the body under a bridge. As you said, why not call an ambulance? Why not try and do everything possible to help him, even if he knew that the man was already dead?
She wanted to lash out and hit him just to shut him up. She couldn't stand to hear what he was saying, because it was true and she knew it. Until she'd held the sword herself, she couldn't have imagined herself capable of deliberately hurting someone. But that had changed the moment she wielded the blade against Anya Creed. And that hadn't been self-defense. She'd planned it. Owenna had enticed her to the house with every intention of killing her. And now she had a bigger plan. A plan that would right an even bigger wrong.
Heat up. We're going.
Traffic was backlogged more than a mile, and the line for the ferry terminal ground to a halt. Anya was glad that they had set off early, not that it looked like it was going to make a lot of difference. She glanced in her side mirror to see that Garin was still a couple of cars behind her and not moving, just as he had been for the past half an hour. Things would start moving when they opened the ferry doors, no doubt. Her phone lay on the passenger seat beside her. She kept glancing across at it in case it was ringing and for some reason she couldn't hear it. The clock on the dash flashed 12:03. She had less than an hour until the rendezvous. A few more yards of ground crept across. It was going to be a while before she reached the front, but at least she was moving now. Anya snatched up her phone.
Yes?
I can see you.
Hard not to, I think.
Quite. Cowards, Yellow. Follow the signs to the short-term parking lot and wait for me to call you back.
Owenna hadn't asked if she had the mantle. Anya had been prepared to lie if the question was raised. The cars in front of her had moved up, opening a gap between them. Anya raised a hand in apology to the driver behind her, then called Garin, using the hands-free speaker.
You made contact?
Yep. Short-term parking and wait for her to make contact again.
I won't be far away if you need me. Don't do anything stupid.
You mean nothing stupid apart from getting out of the car to meet a woman who's just kidnapped Rue and has already tried to kill me once this week.
Right. Nothing stupid.
She followed the sign for the short-term parking. Awenna had chosen the place for a reason. Anya didn't know what that reason was, which meant that Awenna had at least one trump card, if not all of them, in her deck. Anya had driven around the lot a few times to give Garin a chance to park nearby and maintain eye contact. She couldn't see anyone in the surrounding cars. She couldn't obviously see Awenna on either the roof or observation deck of the nearby terminal building either. But that didn't mean she wasn't there. She had to assume Awenna Llewellyn could see her and knew she'd parked. She leaned against the canary-yellow bodywork of the Porsche, waiting for the woman to call.
Stay where you are. I'm coming to you.
Anya tried not to look at Garin, who had parked two bays over, as she swept her gaze around the lot, trying to see where the woman was coming from. Even so, Awenna had almost reached her before Anya realized it, clutching what could only be her sword. The blade was wrapped in a piece of sacking.
Where is it?
Where's Rue?
Show me the mantle.
We could do this all day. I'm not showing you the mantle until you prove to me that Rue's unharmed.
You'll just have to trust me.
Not gonna happen. Where is he?
Fine.
Awenna reached into her pocket and pulled out a ticket.
He's on the ferry, fast asleep in the trunk of my car. You're going to have to be quick if you're going to get him before the ship sails. The ticket is for you once I have the mantle. I told you, I've got no intention of hurting him.
Anya snatched the ticket from her hand and ran between the parked cars straight to where Garin was clambering out of his car.
He's on the ferry.
She thrust the ticket into his hand.
Get him. I'll deal with her.
Garin didn't waste any time. He reversed out of his space and cut across the lot, angling for the front of the snake of cars.
Oh, you double-crossing bitch! Where is it? Where is my mantle?
I don't have it. I told you it wasn't there.
Don't lie to me!
Awenna was right up in her face, inches from her, so close she could taste the sour reek of teeth that hadn't been cleaned in a couple of days.
Where is the mantle?
I don't have it. There was no cloak. Look in the car for yourself. Go on, look.
She stepped back to let the woman get through, but instead of leaning in to check the back seat for the treasure, she leaned in and brought her right arm up. She slammed her forearm into the burns on Anya's face. As Anya stumbled back, shocked, Awenna punched her in the head. Awenna stepped over her and delivered a rib-crushing kick. Anya struggled to get up as Awenna ran off between the cars. Dazed, Anya crawled to the end of the car. She scrambled back to her feet, leaning on the nearest car, and scanned the lot for Awenna Llewellyn, but there was no sign of her.
Oh.
It was, however, easy to spot the bright yellow Porsche close by. She started walking, wondering if she'd be able to drive after that beating, knowing at the same time that she had no choice in the matter. Instinctively, Anya's gaze went to the wheels of the Porsche as she reached it, but they hadn't been slashed. Anya glanced up just in time. Anya turned and caught a fleeting glimpse of the white-haired passenger in the back seat. He looked back at her, face unreadable. Rue.